bang on the board, obviously, huge emotions from Magnus. He said yesterday, we interviewed him after the event finished, and he said that...
Obviously, I don't think for the last two events you can say that Gukesh is playing close to the best classical chess. That would be a big stretch.
Mm.
Not even a stretch, I think that would just be dishonest.
Do you think the new generation is still a bit far behind? All right, here we go, Fabi. Post-Norway Chess pod. We're just about to start the closing ceremony. Yesterday was the final round. Actually, super exciting final round. We, in fact, haven't talked since the beginning of the tournament. It's been a long one. It's been a fun one. It's been pretty wild also. Actually, for everybody involved in this tournament, there were so many things happening at the same time, so many stories. But yeah, let's sum it up from your perspective in terms of result first. Are you happy with the result?
Kind of neutral, I guess. Not unhappy. I mean, plus one in this field is reasonable. It can happen to anyone, you know? Almost anyone would consider it a good result. You know, so maybe some people would be, maybe Magnus would be a bit disappointed with it. I don't know if anyone else would consider it subpar. I mean, it's a 28, like, 30 performance or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
With plus one. Just because it's such a strong field, you know, it's close to 2800 average, I guess, very close to it. On the other hand, of course, I did have very good chances to win the tournament, especially if I had beaten Arjun, I would be very close.
That was basically a big turn point for you, for your tournament. Like, you were doing really well up to that point.
Yeah, I thought the quality outside of the first game was, of course, kind of poor. I think it was mostly like first round sort of stuff for me, because when I suddenly got down to seconds, I was like, oh yeah, this is actually rough. 10-second increment is rough, and I only play with it once a year in Norway, and I start to remember at some point during the tournament, like, once you get the first time you get to it, you're like, oh, this is why people avoid it. Yeah, and you suddenly realize, but it's hard to make that mental connection before, because you really need the, I mean, of course, you can logically deduce that, yeah, this is going to be very dangerous to get down to 10 seconds, but just how dangerous it is, you only realize when you get there.
That's the game against Nakamura from round one.
Yeah, against Hikaru. Of course, it was a safe position, so also my feeling of danger was just like zero. He offered a draw at some point. I thought, okay, I'll play a few more moves. I don't know why. It's not like I had any hope to win at that point. It was arguably, I wouldn't say easier for him to play, but yeah, just an equal position. The issue is that if you're like trying to play it for a win, then it starts to maybe be a bit riskier. Then I quickly realized, like more or less 2 moves after I declined the draw, that okay, you know, you're not really playing for this for a win. But at that point, I didn't want to offer a draw back.
It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah. Like, so I figured, okay, I'll play like 10 accurate moves, and we'll make a draw. The problem is, after 10 moves, it was still, the position was still going. At that point, he wouldn't have accepted a draw. I was also lower on time. And then I made a very silly decision to play f4 in general. Okay, then it's very unpleasant. Not losing, but very unpleasant. And then right at the last moment, when it was already a draw again, and I again lost my sense of danger, and I decided, okay, just like gain a bit of time on the clock, I played a quick move. And unfortunately, it was also just a losing move. It was like the first mistake was, not the first mistake, but the first serious mistake was the last mistake. It was just immediately game over. If I keep my knight on c5, he can no longer make progress. I also very often have sacrificial ideas. I can sacrifice my knight, which would like give me enough counterplay for a draw in case I had to, but I don't even have to do that. So okay, but after that, I mean, all the games were good. Against Wei Yi was a good game. Against Arjun was a good game. Then 2 draws, but could have won both against Magnus and Gukesh, but still they were good games overall, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Against Gukesh and Magnus, it was like down to 1 move, basically. Against Magnus, totally accidental. It was already heading towards a draw. I think we both felt this. And then for some reason, he played g5.
Which feels very natural, by the way.
Which feels very natural. I thought it doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. The bishop's actually trapped on h3.
Yeah, you have to go king. e3, d4, knight e5, knight e3, and you trap them.
Yeah,
trap the bishop.
He kind of waits around, and at some point I have to take on b6, he takes h3, I take a4, he takes g4, I give a check, and then my b pawn starts running. It's very fast.
It's still not completely clear at all.
It's a race, but it's a race. I mean, it's not 100%, but yeah, the b pawn runs really, really fast. But of course, with this time control, anything could happen still.
What's about the time control? I mean, this is the only tournament that I can think of that has a 10-second increment, and it somehow completely erases any sort of precision during the endgame phase.
Yeah, I think basically many years ago, Magnus had the idea, most likely. I don't know if it was conjunction with the organizers or not, but he had the idea, I think, that chess is very much also about time management, true, and that the 30-second increment bails people out. But he probably thought no increment leads to just silly flagging situations, and good compromise is 10 seconds. I think in reality it actually does, because you don't avoid time trouble. Nobody avoids it. I mean, even if you manage your time very well, Magnus does tend to do that very well. Hikaru tends to do that very well, for example. You still at some point get into time trouble.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to be
in at least some games.
Precise.
Yeah. Some games you don't. Like, I had games against Wei Yi, for example, didn't get into any time trouble either game. Some games you don't. Sometimes draws also lead to no time trouble situation. But these kind of messy games that go on forever, they always lead to time trouble. And it does actually make a mess of game. Nobody can play with 10-second increment. It's like we're playing rapid, but the difference, I think, is kind of that in rapid, you play a bit more carefree in time trouble. Mm. And here, you also have these like doubts about, because it's a classical game, so it's like very weighty compared to rapid.
Well, the thing is, you also went from thinking, from classical mindset, from thinking and trying to be precise, to a complete nonsensical 10 seconds per move
type of
situation. So it's a big adjustment. Do you think that it would be easier for you guys to like get used to it if you would have more tournaments like that?
I mean, you eventually get used to everything, but I don't think you'd avoid these occasional messy scrambles. Mm. Where unfortunately, I think 30 seconds you do avoid major blunders, and 10 seconds you don't. Mm. Like my game against Gukesh yesterday was a good example, because I played f4 with the sort of idea that, you know, I can't calculate a win. There were two ways to win, but
which were ridiculous.
They were both quite difficult. Maybe it's possible to find it, but I got down to 1 minute. I thought, I'm not going to think anymore. I played f4 knowing that very likely it is a draw in some way, but also thinking he has like 5 seconds and it's an unexpected move. It was kind of a bluff in that sense. It worked out. Mm. Might not have worked out, but it did have a high probability of working out, just because, you know, let's say if you were in Gukesh's position, he's like calculating a few kind of logical moves. For example, after rook d5, he's calculating queen a6 check, probably calculating bishop to c3, probably calculating some other move, whatever is coming to mind, you know.
Bishop f6 maybe, even though bishop f6 is not that
for example,
much of a
bishop f6, yeah. And then if you just throw an unexpected move, it's unlikely that you've thought about it and you just can't adjust. So,
yeah.
I mean, I saw knight c3 in the end. Okay, it was kind of a trap, cheap trap you could call it. But if he had 30 seconds, he wouldn't fall into it.
And that's one of the things. I was talking to Vichy on the way back, and we started thinking about the position, and we started thinking about the moment you played bishop takes c7. After f4, d2, bishop takes c7, it's almost a guarantee that you fall into that trap. Like, it's so difficult not to fall into that trap. Because queen takes c7, queen f4, and just realizing that that position is a draw, no matter what you do, basically with the pawn on d2, is not that easy to do with 5 seconds on the clock or whatever you have, right? Because you also have to mentally adjust once your opponent plays f4. Like, the guy, I think, once he played rook d5, had about 13 seconds. Now you play f4. Boom, 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 boom. Go down to your last 5 seconds. Bishop takes c7. And then what do? You just go d1, right? He played it almost instantaneously.
He got down to 2 seconds.
Really? Before he played d1?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
it
goes so fast.
Okay, with 30 seconds, he wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I would never have lost against Arjun with 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Zero chance.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have won. That's another story, but...
Actually, now that I think about it, it almost balances out your game against Arjun versus your game against Gukesh.
I mean, Gukesh. There were some games that it was just a bit silly, like this game, Arjun Gukesh. I thought this is kind of a silly endgame. At some point, we were looking at it, and every single move was, I mean, we have the bar, right?
Yeah.
It was like every move was either a major mistake or a blunder.
Yeah.
I said on the broadcast with you and Vishy and Anna Rudolph, like, this does destroy endgames. They can't play endgames. I mean, it's not because they can't play endgames. You can't play endgames with this time control. It's too difficult.
Yeah.
I actually think Gukesh did a pretty good job in that game overall, considering he had no time. But still, there were massive blunders. And, Magnus against Gukesh, another example. There were a few examples.
Yeah, you do have to, like, make some very, very important decisions with only a few seconds on the clock. Like, even in the last game, Magnus, he was looking at your game while he was making those last few moves because he always had the opportunity to repeat the position, but he also didn't know whether Gukesh has any chances of winning, because if he wins
he repeats,
like, he felt that he's probably winning, or at least he has a better position. But if Gukesh wins and he makes a draw, then Gukesh wins the tournament. So he was also, like, all the time with, like, 10 seconds looking at the screen, trying to figure things out. And
even if Gukesh draws,
made a draw,
then they would share.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Which maybe he would want to avoid, although in Armageddon, but the thing is, he actually didn't do well in Armageddon here, so maybe he wasn't, like,
he wasn't sure about
super
it.
Confident in Armageddon. No, I mean, I think he would rather play for a win if it was a draw in our game.
And by the way, Arjun, I think, was maybe the best performing player in Armageddon.
Wait.
Like, he won. I'm not sure, because Arjun defeated Wei. Arjun beat him, like, really badly, twice in Armageddon.
Okay, he caught him in the opening. That was a bit unfortunate.
Yes, yes.
Not caught him, just Wei forgot the basic theory of the line.
Yeah.
Which actually I can understand, because I've also always been confused. Do you play King E7 or F8? Although I don't play the line, so I don't really need to know it. But I have, of course, analyzed it and at some point prepared this opening with black. And I was always confused. Do you play King E7 or F8? It was somehow always getting me.
Yeah.
Of course, when you look back, you're, like, thinking, of course, I didn't have to lose against Magnus, for example. Like, hold this game, and then... But after the Arjun game, I was so tilted. I can't express how tilted I was.
I bet. Yeah, yeah.
Rarely have I been that tilted after the game.
I feel like you're not the only one. Obviously, everybody knows about the Magnus story, and we'll get in that in just a second, Magnus against Gukesh. But even Gukesh, the last round, like, I haven't seen him like that. Ever, maybe? Like, after a loss?
I kind of didn't understand exactly why he was so...
It's the emotions that this 10-second increment gives you. It's like you're playing one of those, like, War Rapid and Blitz situation when there's so much at stake riding on decisions you make in 3 seconds. And then you see all the emotion in War Rapid and Blitz. Like, you remember that guy that realizes that his opponent gives a checkmate and he just, like, jumps out of the chair. Yeah.
Level tech lock, right?
Yeah. Like, there's always this type of emotions. Ivanchuk started crying, during War Rapid and Blitz in New York. Like,
Chuki is very emotional. I mean,
yeah, but you don't see that in classical chess sometimes. Like, this 10-second increment just incentivizes,
like, when Gukesh lost against Maxim, for example, in Bucharest.
Yeah,
he was just calmly discussing the game with him after.
Yeah, exactly.
And here, like, the game, he didn't realize that he had a draw. Right after the game. Maybe he had a feeling that it was...
He felt there was something, yes.
Sure, but he was also really losing.
Completely losing.
Really losing. Actually, it was a miracle that he has this rook d6. I mean, it was a great find with, like, 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Because after rook d6, I, again, have to kind of dig a little bit deep. And bishop e3 is not too difficult. I should have played this. Bishop e5 was, of course, silly. I thought that rook d5 wasn't possible. That's the thing. I thought he would go to b6. And then rook d5 came on. I'm like, this is actually very difficult suddenly. Because I was thinking rook d5, queen a6 was, like, somehow, I don't know what I imagined, that it was winning somehow, but it's just not. It is, but I have to find bishop g3, bishop f2, so it's kind of a mess.
Now that I think about it, Gukesh, the second half of the event, and I cannot remember exactly the first half of the event, but the second half of the event, all of his positions were worse or losing. at some point in time. Usually the first big imbalance was that he was worse. Which brings me to the question. I mean, he scored tremendously well. Is he the most resilient player on the planet right now, you think? Because he's extremely resilient whenever he's worse.
I definitely wouldn't say that. I mean, he's a good defender.
Yes.
Most resilient player? No, I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't call him that.
Okay.
But he scored so well. Like, there's so something 50%. From his positions, I mean, 50% is a miracle.
Yeah, that's true. He had a lot of bad positions. I mean,
starting with Magnus, he won that. Starting with Arjun,
the game he drew, he could have lost that for sure.
Okay, that was in the first half of the event. I'm not even talking about that because I don't remember exactly the games. Mm-hmm. I just remember the last five. It was a sequence of just only worse positions.
Well, against Wei Yi, it was worse.
Worst position.
He was also winning completely.
But not before he was worse.
Okay, sure, but...
I mean, he won that. He won that game.
No, he drew.
No.
No, I don't mean the second game. I mean the first game.
The first game. Again, the first half, I don't remember exactly what happened, but...
Yeah, no, the second game, he was worse, but it wasn't so easy.
Not much worse, yeah.
It was a kind of normal worse. Against Arjun was really weird, like, just worse out of the opening with white because your opponent plays first move d6 and just like free advantage with black. It was really... No, I was upset that I didn't win, of course, the first game. But I wasn't so upset. I did mention like he's a good defender. And I've noticed this for a while. He is a good defender. He does tend to get into trouble often. Mm. More than others, I would say. I also tend to get in trouble more than others. But he gets into trouble more than me. If you look at the players who get into trouble the least, it's probably Hikaru and Magnus. And Hikaru creates less chances than some other players. But he's very solid.
Yeah.
So he'll create like 1-2 chances a tournament. But he won't... Okay, here I think he created... let me think of the chances he had. So against me in the first round, he beat Gukesh in the penultimate round. He lost one game to Gukesh.
Gukesh, yeah.
So that's his decisive games. And he was winning against Arjun. I think those were all his opportunities. So three. Magnus created several opportunities. Capitalized in most of them. He won three games. Didn't against Gukesh. That would have been his fourth win. Unusually, of course, he lost. I mean, to draw... I guess can happen. To lose was very unusual. And I was winning 8 out of 10 games. But unfortunately, I did lose 3 games.
I do think you had the most decisive results, right?
No, Gukesh did. He had 8 decisive results.
Gukesh had 8?
4 wins 7. And 4 losses.
That's ridiculous.
I had 7.
Yeah.
Of which 3 were losses, unfortunately. Against Magnus, of course, there were no chances to win with the black pieces.
Yeah.
And against Hikaru in the first round, there were no chances to win. Every other game, I was objectively winning at some point. So that's 8 games, of which I won 4. Drew 2. I won 4, drew 3, and lost 1, yeah?
I think so. You also lost against Hikaru, so...
No, the 2 games.
Yeah, but that doesn't count.
Those were 2 games, yeah?
Yeah.
Against Magnus and Hikaru. Unfortunately, yeah, to lose a winning game is the... Like, to draw, okay, it happens, you know, you mess up wins, but to lose really feels bad. That's why, if Magnus hadn't won that game against Gukesh, I think wouldn't have been so dramatic, but that he lost, that's why there was the reaction. I think he would have been pissed if he didn't win. But to lose it was...
It was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit unusual coming from Magnus. It was his type of position. I don't remember the last time that he actually had one of those slips from a position that you would think, you know, he plays knight e6, he doesn't go king f6, and then he just like grinds it out with an extra pawn. Easy, very technical win for him. Then he starts wandering around with the king, and then you could see that he's starting to feel some pressure. Like he's starting to feel like it's slipping away. Quite unusual. And then, obviously, what happened? Actually, let's speak about what happened. Okay, big question. Bang on the board, obviously. Huge emotions from Magnus. He said yesterday we interviewed him after the event finished, and he said that he was so tilted, there was such strong emotion that he had to get out of the car on the way back to the hotel. Like, he couldn't finish his ride, he had to get out of the car and just like walk. Like, it was something physical, yeah, like a physical emotion that stayed with him for a while. What happened there? Like, what do you think went through his mind when he just like banged? And what do you think of the whole situation?
What situation? No, I really don't. What was the situation?
That I mean, just the media storm after that. That, like, do you think it's good for chess? Do you think? How do you see it from your perspective as a competitor?
I mean, I understood the reaction from like chess fans, because they kind of live in a basement. They don't like see other. They haven't been outside much. It's very dramatic. But from the outside sports world, I really didn't get it.
Everybody was tweeting it.
I just don't understand. I mean, have you seen like what football players do?
Yes.
What tennis players yes. are destroying. I mean, they lose one point, they destroy their racket.
But that's why people got so worked up about it, because they don't expect that from chess. Like, that's just simply not what they think about.
It's just like when just it comes to chess. Bang the table once. I mean, I've seen people bang the table over losing like an internet blitz game. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's the reaction. Yeah, is the top level reaction. Like, you sometimes see that from streamers. Let's say, you know, they make a big fuss about losing a game and they smash something.
No, but
good.
Even
that's
that, you'll see they'll destroy their keyboard or something. Not just like one. I mean, very measured, right?
Measured.
just a kidding table once. I mean, I don't know.
But even like, you know, the super hard handshake for Gukesh was like, you know, a bit scared. Like, you could see
they're both on edge. I mean,
you could see that he was a bit scared.
Oh my god!
On edge. I think that's the thing. Yeah.
But really, I mean, these like streamers, they also freak out over everything. They like lose one unrated bullet game and they destroy their, you know, their hotel room.
Yes. Yes.
No, I just don't. I really don't get what the overreaction over this reaction was. I mean, it's a bit dramatic, sure. I mean, have you, like, really, other sports are.
No, of course.
And boxers, they'll literally kill their opponent. I mean, literally kill their opponent if they lose a match.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're kind of being at least a little bit soft in chess.
So you think it's warranted, is what you're saying? You think it's fine? You think that's okay?
We it
shouldn't
okay. It wasn't
make a big
deal,
fuss
yeah.
out of it.
It wasn't a big deal.
I think it's okay. I actually want, obviously, I have a perspective of a commentator, of a fan of chess, and I do want to see more emotion. I feel like you guys are going through such extreme emotions throughout a chess game, going from winning, losing, et cetera, so much pressure, and then you just keep it all in yourself. I think it should be externalized somehow. So from my perspective, it was very much fine. But I saw a lot of people overreacting over it. So I wanted to hear what your opinion was.
I really didn't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't get the fuss.
It's interesting.
It was a little bit, it was just slightly dramatic, I would say. A slightly dramatic moment.
Mm.
Not even that dramatic. Like, the game itself was surprising. That
yeah.
was, from a tournament point of view, was kind of dramatic.
Yeah.
The reaction was like, I mean, he's also like hit the table before after games. After blitz games, right?
I mean, probably, I don't know. I mean, I know Gukesh.
At least it was like a pretty important classical game.
Yeah.
It wasn't some irrelevant game, let's say.
That brings me to the next question. Do you think he thought about that game on a much higher scale? Like, he really wanted to beat Gukesh to prove a point?
Oh, yeah. I think that he definitely wanted to win to prove a point. The point being that not only is he not nearly as strong as Magnus, but also that he's not as strong as other players, I think, would be his point. That I think that's what he was trying to go for.
Mm.
So I think he wanted to dominate.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of what he said also
he put it in more of a broader term, like he wanted to dominate the competition and then just like finish on a very high score. But I think he wanted to do something specifically against Gukesh.
I don't think he cared as much if he were to dominate Arjun, or for example. I think it's understandable in a way because Gukesh is the world champion, carries a bit more weight. You know, you beat Wei Yi, he's a great player, but it doesn't feel like Magnus has anything that he has possibly to prove against Wei Yi or against me.
Mm.
Maybe, you know, against me and Hikaru, he'll also feel like, okay, this is a really nice game to win. But yeah, I think he's aware of the public aspect of it as well, that there is definitely a discussion, you know, Gukesh, world champion, or Ding, world champion. With Ding, it was less because Ding just like couldn't play chess whatsoever at that point, and there was really not much of a discussion of is Ding or Magnus, like who we weren't discussing that. I mean, Ding was getting last place in every event he played, which is just the reality, right? While Gukesh does fight for first in a number of tournaments, not all tournaments, but he fought for first in Vikings A, for example. He has had a good year. I think before, like a few months ago, I said he had probably the most impressive classical year of anyone.
Mm-hmm. 2024.
I think that if you bear in mind the last two results, we do have to tone that down a bit. I mean, Bucharest in this, it's okay, -1 total is not a great score over two events. It's not a disastrous score, but, you know.
He's stabilizing, right?
Yeah. I don't think. For the last two events, you can say that Gukesh is playing close to the best classical chess. That would be a big stretch.
Mm.
Not even a stretch. I think that would just be dishonest, right?
Yeah.
But overall, if you look at the last year and a half, then Olympiad and Candidates and Vikings A, twice good performances, and probably something else like WM Math, or I don't know exactly, but some other close event. Obviously, he's been one of the players who is ambitiously fighting for first place in many events.
What do you think? I actually was thinking about this yesterday. It almost felt a discernment, like a clash of generations as well. You had Gukesh, you had Arjun, Wei, I guess you could call him, close to the youngish generation, even though he's close to you guys as well. But still, it was you and Magnus, well, Magnus and you, in first positions.
And Hikaru was
And Hikaru well. Close, yeah. Do you think the new generation is still a bit far behind?
Not like far behind. I mean, they're very good.
Are they on pace, I guess?
On pace for what exactly?
To take over.
Probably not.
Not yet, yeah? Good.
I think that, okay, the first thing is that if you look at what I would call the previous generation before mine, this would be like the early, let's say I'm in the early 90s, Magnus. Hikaru is a bit older, but maybe you could also call Hikaru in that generation, Maxime, Karjakin, Ian, Ding, Wesley, Anish, for example, this group. Probably forgot some people. And then the previous one would be players like Levon, Grishuk, Bakro, Ponomaryov, and, of which Levon is, you could
kind
say,
of
the
only one.
The leader of this generation, right?
Kind of the only one that's at the top.
I would say that he still plays on equal terms with let's say, Arjun.
Yeah.
Or
100%.
I mean, he's much less motivated.
Yes.
But he still plays on equal terms with Arjun, Gukesh, Prague, and so on.
Yeah. I mean, Grishuk is 26-60 right now.
Yeah, but also Grishuk doesn't really play, and when he does play, he just draws all his games.
Yeah. He's about motivation.
Yeah. So I don't really see why, if Levon is like 10 years older than me, and he's competing on completely equal terms with these young guys, that why, or like Hikaru, who's 5 years older than me, it feels like he's still a stronger player than these young guys, for the most part. That why there would be this theory that, you know, they're going to take over anytime soon.
Yeah.
Especially if you consider that Magnus is, I would say, clearly stronger than them.
But Magnus is quitting chess.
To start with, I'm not sure that's true. And he does play much less classical. That's obviously true.
Yeah.
But this is like the Hans thing. He's just like, okay, Hikaru's going to retire, and I'm going to watch him 70-year-olds retire. I mean, is this how you take over? You know, that the guys get bored. I don't really see it. I mean, they're very strong. I think that we'll be competing on more or less equal terms for a while. But I don't find them scary yet, whatsoever.
They're still extremely young, which is incredible. I mean, obviously they're at the top; they're going to fight with you guys for a while. But they're still so young. I'm thinking about Gukesh; he's 19. Arjun, 21.
Prague,
19. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, they're very young.
What is he?
Or 20,
what is Prague?
20. 20, 20, yeah,
maybe
like
20.
That.
Yeah.
No, I would say, like, of course, we've kind of adjusted our standards, because usually 19 we wouldn't be talking about.
They became so good so fast.
Yeah, we wouldn't be talking about best players in the world at 19. So this is a rare thing already. But maybe I'm being a bit unfair. When I play, for example, Arjun or Gukesh, I do get this feeling, not just based on this tournament, but on many tournaments, that I can really outplay them, like, very significantly and get a lot of winning chances. And then the question is about other factors, because I don't think they can outplay me in the same way. Although they will get winning chances, and then it's about some other factors. But, like, really, my honest opinion. It's not trying to like play them down or anything. I'm not doing that. They can definitely outperform me in various ways. But my feeling is that in various ways, I'll get winning chances against them. So if it's in a long match. They're great fighters. They also give a lot of chances.
Yeah.
And that, it can be very frustrating to play against someone who doesn't give many chances.
Isn't that part of the experience? Isn't that just, you reach a certain point, you've been playing against this. Again, these kids have been playing with you guys at the 2800 level for maybe 2 years max. They still have a lot to learn, right?
It's also stylistic.
I
give many chances.
But styles change also, right?
Kind of.
Throughout one school
I've
year.
Always given many chances to my opponents. I think I also create, like, if you compare me and Hikaru, it's just very stylistic, very big stylistic difference.
Hikaru used to be that he was giving a lot of chances. In the last, I would say, decade, well, maybe not decade, maybe like 5-6 years, he's, like, extremely tight.
Yeah, I think we are going a bit back in history.
Yeah.
At some point, he had the, you could call, pragmatic decision to tighten up his play. So he plays very tight chess. He doesn't give many chances, but of course, like, some of the ways you get chances is by getting bad positions. It's your opponents get ambitious. They spend time trying to find chances. You get into time trouble. It becomes a mess. They also can't adjust if at some point it goes towards a draw. There's, like, a lot of these factors. If you play very clean chess, it can also limit your opportunities a bit, because you because in some ways, when you play clean chess, your opponents also tend to play a bit better, for the most part. So if you play, like, call it dirty, not dirty, but, like, you play kind of messy chess, like Gukesh was doing here, it also, like, somehow tends to lead to more decisive possibilities, also to more losses.
What's your read on Magnus and his chatter about potentially not playing a lot of classical? Like, where is he going to go? Classical we already sort of know. He's only playing this tournament. We might not see him at this tournament again. Do you, let's say, think that you've played your last classical game against Magnus?
I would guess not. But it is true that if I think about where I could play him in classical, not counting freestyle, which obviously will happen in Vegas, for example, right? But just counting classical setup, classical time control, outside of Norway chess, I really don't have an opportunity to play him. Like, he's not going to play in the World Championship cycle, probably not in the World Cup or something like that, not in the Grand Chess Tour classical events, not in the U.S. Championship, not in whatever other tournament, random tournament. So, yeah, it's. I still think somewhere it will happen.
Emil said that he still hopes that Magnus is going to join the cycle in about 3-4 years.
I don't think that's very likely unless they do some major changes. But 3-4 years, you have to understand, the guy will be around.
He said they'll give him a lot of money. As in, they'll give the World Championship match a lot of money.
Okay.
Like $5 million, I think he was mentioning. Something.
It's also a bit weird because when he was playing, they didn't put those prize funds up.
Yeah.
So why, when he's playing, you don't put the prize fund up, but suddenly he's not playing? You're like, oh, now I'll put the... I mean, when we played, it was for $1 million, the minimum.
Yeah.
And I think that was a very potentially attractive match for sponsors. I mean,
yeah,
we were both in our mid-20s.
Prime.
Magnus, obviously, is... Maybe he's a bit more of a household name now around the world, but still he was a household name. I was the first American challenger in a long time. But somehow they, Fide and Aegon, who was at the time there, they didn't really raise money for the match.
Yeah.
You know, they put the bare minimum price. So it's, of course, possibly also a lot of talk. Maybe they want Magnus back. Maybe they now... have some info that, you know, someone is interested in putting a lot of money.
Yeah. I think maybe, that's probably that's the case. But also he said that he would have to go through the same process, which makes me believe that he's probably never going to go back to the candidates and have to go through the candidates. And
I don't think he's playing a 14-round classical candidates event.
Yeah.
Especially since he is not favored to win it.
Yeah, that's what
I think.
That's what he said. And no, obviously, you know, from Fide, from his perspective, that's probably just a hope,
and by the way, an expectation. People are going to like call me out on saying he's not favored to win it. But I think if you look at the numbers, like any statistical model will not put him as a favorite to win it over the field.
Over the field, yeah.
Yeah, no, as an individual, of course. He would
one
have
by one basis, yes.
But over the field, I don't...
Yeah. No, of course not. Of course not.
Probably the highest chance that they would give him is like
30%.
No, not 30. I mean, definitely they're giving him over 30. But the highest is probably around 50.
Hmm. I would think 50 is huge.
No, that's huge. It's 8 players.
Yeah.
But still, they would probably look at all the amount of tournaments he's won and still would give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, 14 rounds, it's a brutal event, you know. And if we're talking about someone who at that point is almost 40 years old and doesn't really enjoy it, it's not really a guarantee anymore.
Outside of Norway Chess, we sort of touched upon most what happened at Norway Chess. I guess Hikaru is also ready for the candidates. He seems to be wanting to... He probably played quite well, in his opinion, and the rating situation is still very much favorable to him. It seems like he's probably going to make it. He just needs to play some games. There's been a few players that have somewhat popped up. One of them is Aravind. Aravind is like... I don't think we've talked about Aravind, but he's like 27.50 right now.
Maybe even more?
No, I think 27.50.
Okay.
I think I checked him yesterday, and live he was 27.50. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not. But still, that's ridiculous. Obviously, top 10. I think that's top 10. What's your reaction to that? I mean, India right now has 4 players in top 10.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never actually seen it before. I've never played him to start with. I've never seen a progress of like 160 points. No, not 160. He was...
140. He went from like 26-10, I think. Maybe last year. I think it was last year, perhaps at the beginning of last year, to 27-50 in like a year.
Yeah, let's say 130 to be on the safe side. 130 points in a year at that level. And he's also around like 25 years old.
He's 25. That's the problem. Not the problem. That's the special thing about him. It's just like at the moment in his career where people usually plateau. Or at least they don't make this type of like huge jumps.
No, it's very unexpected. I don't know him as a player. I've never played him.
Yeah.
Some Tile Tuesday games I've played him. That's it. Never classical, never rap, never blitz over the board as far as I remember. He plays extremely well, looking at his games. Like very accurate. He doesn't lose games.
Mm.
He rarely, if ever, gets in trouble. He mostly just completely overpowers his opponents. He isn't playing top players for the most part, but he does kind of like bulldoze through a lot of players in a very dominating fashion. We'll have to see how he does in a top event when he gets there.
He's a riddle, for sure. He just won the event in, I think, Armenia with Prague. They shared. So, yeah, another good performance by him. And lastly, Anish took his revenge in dramatic fashion in his match against Hans. Not only that, Hans won against Dubov. So those two Hans matches. What's your reaction to those two Hans matches? I want to start with Anish because that's the most recent one.
Didn't watch him much. I just saw he was behind the score and somehow. I think that Hans really, I mean, it's just unimaginable with the score he had with so few games remaining that he didn't win this. It was like really, really weird not to win this match.
Yeah.
The same for the Dubov match that Dubov didn't win. Was really weird because he also had a huge score.
Yes.
And also in the last game, he was just two pawns up in a rook endgame, and this is the final game of the match. And he just needs to win. He's two pawns up in a rook endgame with no pawns left, and all the pawns are on the same side of the board. It's 4-2 on one side of the board. This one, I don't know what happened to Dubov. But okay, it's Blitz. Blitz, sometimes crazy things happen. This was a bit crazy. I really would have put it at like 100-1 that Hans doesn't lose this rook endgame. I mean, just too simple of a position. You basically can't really trick your way out of this.
And that was live. That was face to face.
That was one against Anish was online on this new platform, which I don't really care too much to talk about.
Yeah. So interesting matches. Organized by Hans, fighting the chess mafia as usual. And Anish somehow feels like we haven't talked about Anish, and I know he's crying a lot on the internet. I do want to give him some shout outs. He did win Sharjah, he did beat Hans, he seems to be somewhat back in the mix.
Your first shout out was that he's crying a lot on the internet.
Well, he was. He's always complaining on the internet. He's always on Twitter just attacking everybody. I don't know. It's a bit weird. But now he got the bounty, the 10K bounty. He's going to have another chance at another 10K bounty in a few days against Hans.
I mean, it's great, of course, to...
10K in 2 hours? That's not bad.
Yeah. It's a great payday. I mean, especially since I really do feel like a lot of these players are... favored against Hans.
Hans doesn't believe that.
I know he does. I know he's confident. He's also good at Blitz, so it's not like it's a pushover or anything. But and I wouldn't say Anish is a favorite necessarily, but a lot of players that he's offering to play matches against, I think, are favored to win 10K.
I think he just announced something.
He said he's playing Levon in a Blitz match.
Ah, just Levon, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we sort of knew that. Yeah, we kind of made a connection.
Fourth highest player in history, it's not a... It just says it right there, no?
Yes.
So, okay. We have the ratings. We know who Levon's peak is, like 28-35, I guess.
Ah, he's playing Nihal also.
Nihal in what? Increment blitz.
18 games of 3 plus 1, 18 games of 3 plus 2 Fischer random, best of 32, basically.
He should be a favorite against Nihal.
$5,000 bounty. So there's a new concept, the concept of bounty. So you don't risk anything. You're just like, you can get 5-10K by just playing the match against Hans. I almost want to play against Hans.
I don't think you're going to make any money out of this. I'm afraid.
Okay. Oh, I want to play Hans. Hans, come on. I'll fight for your bounty on C-squared.
I don't know if this is a great idea, Christian.
I mean, again, we'll fight for the bounty. I love it. Okay, cool. I think that's it. We're just about to go to the closing ceremony. And tomorrow, back home, What's next for you?
Just chill for a bit, then Zagreb, Grancha's tour.
That's the one, but I'm sure we'll talk before that. Zagreb is coming, GCT, 30th of June, 1st of July. I think actually it starts on the 2nd. 1st of July is the opening, 2nd is the start of that. Magnus is going to be in that one. Gukesh, you, it's actually ridiculously strong compared to the first one in Poland, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Anyway, like, subscribe, and let us know in the comments what you thought about Norway Chess. Cheers.